This is episode 62 of Extraordinary Women Radio. Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gilner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey. Hello, my extraordinary women friends. I'm just back from the eWoman Network conference in Dallas last weekend, and I am coming back filled to the brim with inspiration and new learnings. I'm such a big believer that we need to get out of our comfort zones and put ourselves out into places of expansion, to see things through different lenses, to plant some new seeds for growth. And boy, oh boy, did Sandra Yancey, the CEO of eWoman, deliver. She is so full of wisdom. And guess what, my friends? She's going to be joining us on a future episode here at Extraordinary Women Radio. She said yes. I walked away from the conference with about 30 pages of notes, and I'm going back through them this week to pick and choose the best nuggets that can really impact my business the most. And I'll be sharing some of these in the coming weeks on my Cami Gilner Facebook group. What I love about Sandra is that she really gets into the real nuts and bolts of CEO mastery. And I see some great opportunities to focus in on some of these on my own business and to bring back to my mastermind clients for their businesses. It was really great stuff. And speaking of CEO mastery, today's Extraordinary Women Radio guest, Juana Bordas, has been the founder and CEO of several organizations. Juana has been a woman of action, where she sees a need, she's found a solution and gone out and started it. Juana is an inductee to the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame, and I'm always honored to get to interview the inductees from the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame. So Juana immigrated to the U.S. from Nicaragua on a banana boat. She's led such an interesting life. And yes, we do talk about immigration in America today. The youngest daughter in a family of eight, she was the first to go to college. Upon graduating, she joined the Peace Corps and ended up working in the barrios of Santiago, Chile. Juana is a founder and executive director of Denver's Mikasa Women's Center. Today, Mikasa is the largest Hispanic-serving organization in Colorado. She was also the founding president of the National Hispania Leadership Institute. In 2001, she founded the Circle of Latina Leadership focused on preparing the next generation of leaders. Juana is the first Latina faculty for the Center for Creative Leadership and taught the Leadership Development Program, the most highly utilized executive training program in the world. She has designed, developed, and implemented leadership programs for national nonprofits, corporations, and government agencies across the country. Her award-winning book, Salsa, Soul, and Spirit, Leadership for a Multicultural Age, is utilized in over 100 universities. In 2014, her book, The Power of Latino Leadership, was recognized by the Nautilus Award for the Best Multicultural Book and the International Latino Award for Leadership. Juana served as advisor to Harvard's Hispanic Journal on Public Policy, the Kellogg National Fellows Program, as board vice chair of the Greenleaf Center for Servant Leadership, and a trustee for the International Leadership Association. Juana was selected as a Wise Woman Award by the National Center for Women's Policy Studies. In 2017, she was selected by the National Diversity Council as one of the most influential and powerful Latinos in America. I'm honored to bring Juana Bordas to you today on Extraordinary Women Radio. Let's meet Juana. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Juana.
I am just delighted to be with all these extraordinary women.
Quite an honor. Yeah, well, it's so much fun getting to interview so many extraordinary women. And I'm always honored to get to interview the inductees to the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame. What an honor that must have been.
Yeah, well, I kind of smile about it now because, to tell you the truth, it was 20 years ago that I got into the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame, and I'm now the oldest Latina that's still alive. Because, you know, we are a historical organization as well. But I think what it did, you know, I was like 55, is it really changed my perspective on what I was doing. And, you know, I now say that legacy is the greatest gift that a leader can leave. And I think that's what the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame is about. It's about really looking at the legacy that women have left and really reminding all of us, you know, that our history is so important and that young girls need to be able to identify and aspire, to be able to be extraordinary themselves.
Right. What is the legacy that each person wants to leave? And I think that's such an important question to be asking ourselves.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't usually do that until you're older anyway. And, of course, you know, the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame, but when you're inducted into that and you see it's always critical mass for me. You know, we don't do anything alone. Leadership is not a person. It's a group. It's a team. It's an effort. It's a community. And so when you see these hundreds of women and their collective contribution, the light switch goes on and says, wow, you know, I do my piece and I'm part of an incredible movement that will change society.
I so believe it. So I'd love to hear some of your personal stories. How did your early experiences prepare you for all the wonderful leadership you've done and living the very purposeful life that you've led?
Well, I'll talk a little bit more about my immigrant experience, when I talk about that. But I really think that it was the dreams of my parents that was, first of all, the greatest motivator for me because, you know, as immigrants, they gave up everything in order to come to this country so that their children could have a better life. And that
right.
dream, you know, they deferred their dreams so that I could dream and so that I could become educated. And, you know, I always say I live in the nicest house I've ever lived in, you know. So my mother actually got a job working in the lunchroom, cleaning floors and cooking food in the Catholic school so I could get a good education because she knew at that time that for a young immigrant girl, because I entered school not even speaking English, that I would need, you know, a good education. And plus, I learned a lot of good values. And third, my mother was right in the lunchroom, so I didn't dare mess up. but I do want to say that the education I received as a young person, and I was thinking about this the other day because in the Catholic school, when you were in high school, they always asked you to think about dedicated action, which means like everything I do has to have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And I just recently heard Sandra Cisneros speak, who's the top Latina author. You know, she's written The House on Mango Street and all this. And she says, before I begin to write, I dedicate my work and I set my intention. You have to have a deeper purpose in life than, you know, just getting up in the morning and going to work. So that whole idea of having a life of purpose really started with my parents who planted the seeds that I was here to do something really, really great, that they had sacrificed everything so that their children could do something. And I have eight brothers and sisters, many of which are accomplished. And because I was the youngest daughter,
mm-hmm.
I actually had four mothers because I had three older sisters.
Right.
And when you come from societies and communities that are fairly collective, everybody helps each other. So since I was the young girl, I really was nurtured by my family and I'm so grateful. But that instilled in me a sense of responsibility to give back as well, you know, to those who much have been given,
yes.
Much will be expected.
Yes, yes, yes. So let's hear a little bit about being an immigrant from Nicaragua. I can't say that word today.
Yeah, Nicaragua. It
Thank
is a,
you.
A cute word, huh? Nicaragua. You know, how are things
yes.
in Nicaragua?
Yes.
Well, you know, my first memory is being in the hull of a banana boat. You know, we didn't have a first class passage. We were down there with the cargo, with all the bananas and all the coconuts. And my brother Cristóbal said, Juana, ¿quieres un coco? Do you want a coconut? And but the thing that was interesting to me, especially as we look at immigration today, I was 3 years old. I couldn't imagine being pulled away from my family like they're doing with the children today on the border.
So heartbreaking.
Because first of all, you're so disoriented, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
I was disoriented, but I was there with my mother and six of her children. So I had that security. But I can really tell you that when I got here, and especially when I entered school, it really is an alien experience in the long run. And I believe there's a saying in Spanish, no hay mal que por bien no venga. It says there's nothing bad that's going to happen, that something good won't come out of that. And I think, you know, that's the idea of transformation, which is certainly what we teach in leadership. And so as I struggled as a child, I became a bicultural, bilingual person. And on top of it, I have an incredible compassion for those that struggle because right. my family did it. And that's a great gift, you know, and it gave me some stamina. You know, people say to me, well, how can I be an author and how can I do all these things? And I say, well, first of all, if my mother could do what she did with a fifth grade education, and I could tell you her story, which I think is more amazing than my story. And if I could do what I did at 6 and 7 years old, hell, I can do anything.
Right.
You know, I mean, think about it. I was a child and I was maneuvering in an alien culture, learning it. And by the way, I learned it well. I learned it well enough to now, you know, be Dr. Wannabordas, and to be able to make it through educational systems and then to be able to contribute. But I think one of the reasons I'm so extraordinary is because I married together my culture, my immigrant experience, the hard work that my parents did, the struggles that I had as a child where I had to borrow clothes sometimes and things like that. You know, if it doesn't kill you, makes you stronger.
I feel really prepared
for leadership because of my early childhood. When I was a kid, I didn't think that way.
Right, because you're in the midst of it. But it shaped you.
Yeah.
And it gave you
exactly.
a foundation. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it is, I mean, what's going on right now with these poor children in our country is so heartbreaking. What do you feel we should all be doing to address this?
Well, hopefully people have written and called and that kind of thing. I know people who have actually gone to the border. I think it's a time to be really active. And one of the things that's kind of concerning is that there's so many things going on, like the Muslim ban and some of the environmental protection that protects the future for our children, really, that a lot of us feel overwhelmed. But I just keep thinking that we have to get through this period and we really have to hold on to our values. America is a country of immigrants. My family has contributed incredibly, not just me, but all four of my brothers served in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Immigrants come in this country and they clean and they cook and they take care of the children and they take care of the elderly. They do a lot of the jobs that other people don't want to do. But when I looked at my parents, they had vision. They had determination. They had really good values. I'm going to work hard and then I'm going to make sure my children have a better life. They contributed to the community. They helped other immigrants. And those are the kind of values most of our immigrants bring here. And that's what's made America what it is today. So I think people should say, I am an immigrant. Unless you're 100% American Indian, you have immigrant roots.
Right.
And
absolutely.
You must stand up.
That's
you
right.
must stand up today. It's a time to stand up, and it's a time to say America is great because of our values, and we want to hold on to those.
Yes, yes. I so agree. And I know you're an advocate of giving voice to the contributions that Latinos and Latinas have made and are making to America. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you're so passionate about that?
Yeah, well, I was talking a little bit about critical mass. Change always comes when, enough people, and it doesn't have to be, you know, even 51%, by the way, but it has to be a strong advocacy group says, this isn't working. It isn't working for us, and it isn't working for people. And that's my focus point. Is this working for our people, for our children, for our young? So critical mass is one thing, but there's another thing you have to consider when you're talking about minority communities. For example, Latinos didn't become a recognized group till 1977. Huh. So when I was growing up, no such thing as Hispanic or Latino, and it only got on the census in 1980. So Latinos are still going through an identity formation stage. Who are we? What are our values that hold us together? What is our culture? Why is language so important? Well, within that structure, the next thing you need to do is to build organizations that reflect your culture, because if they don't exist, then all the organizations that you interface with, whether it was the public schools when I was a child, or whether it's your business where you work, they're not going to reflect values of the different people that make it up. They're not going to reflect the values of women or Hispanics or African Americans. And the only way to change that is to begin to have models that prove that the way we lead and the way we relate to one another is effective and works. And so I was in my late 30s, more or less, when I got a call from the minister at the Mennonite church who said, there's a group of women here who want to learn. Their kids are in daycare and they want something too. And so we formed this partnership and started an organization called Mikasa Women's Center at the time.
Yes, yes.
Mikasa is now 40 years old and the largest wow. Hispanic organization serving people in the state of Colorado, the Hispanic serving organization, because our motto was Hispanic women building the future together. But it was also a family model where people could come in and be comfortable. We taught them English so that they would be comfortable. And we were like a bridge between the mainstream culture and the Latino culture, because we need to be successful in both. But part of being successful is knowing who you are, knowing what your contributions are, knowing what your cultural assets are, knowing other people around you that can support you in that. And so, it works. I think women in the 90s had a lot of women programs and leadership programs, and we used to get together in consciousness raising groups way back in the 80s. For those of you, it's probably your moms, but we did this, right?
Right.
We learned about being socialized as women and how that limited us, how we were taught to be nice rather than speak our mind, for example. So there's certain dynamics that you have to study and learn in order to be effective, and you can only do that in a group. You can't do it by yourself. It has right. to be a collective process.
Right.
So after I left Mikasa, I started leadership programs, because that's where I'm at today, is how do we build inclusive leadership for a multicultural society? And it's just a win-win. Every culture, every gender, every nationality brings a positive asset to the table, and we can tap into those as long as we're willing to listen, to be inclusive, to look at what works and what doesn't work, and to have a deep respect for every single individual that we interface with.
So all these different organizations that you have created, that you've launched, that you've started, what has been the thread? I mean, there's been a thread of uplifting. Tell us a little bit more about what has been your why behind starting all of these different organizations, and from the leadership side to the Mikasa.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind for me is the loss of human potential that happens when you have, and people are now, talking about microaggression and even white supremacy, because that means that the structure of society has been pretty much put in place by white males. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a man's world.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a book in the 90s written by Carol Gilligan at Harvard, and it was called In a Different Voice. And she said one of the different reasons women are having such a hard time assuming leadership is because they don't know what it looks like.
Right.
They don't know what it looks like. They haven't had it, and they don't know how to do it. So I really am motivated by the fact that I do believe that every single person has a contribution to make. And number two, we are all completely unique. What you do is different than what I do, which is different than what the people you work with. Everybody has a different talent and a different thing to do with their lives. So there's no competition. We just come together to figure out how we can collectively support each other and enhance each other's gifts. So I just think that, having organizations that reflect women's values, where relationships and helping one another and support is important, where partnership and family and children are important, where learning, where everybody doing their share, all of these values, that we've grown up with. A lot of times I'll use proverbial wisdom to teach this. For example, a woman saying is, a stitch in time saves nine.
Mm-hmm.
And so if women can take that and use that to understand, oh, I got to be strategic. I got to plan ahead. Mm-hmm. I have to understand, how do I do this in order to be effective? So it's really fun to do it that way, because we need to bring women, people of color, people with different gender perspectives, the LGBTQT community. We need to bring everybody into leadership and try to build this new society, which is going to value the potential and gifts of all children.
Hmm. I'm speaking in a couple of weeks in Portland, and I'm speaking on the changing art of women in leadership. And I think what's beautiful is that there is a place for women to really be stepping up into a new type of leadership, really owning who they are versus trying to project being someone else or being something else. I think the time right now is really for us to own our gifts of who we are, our stories, our, you know, our, like you said, our cultures, and really, because then we become authentic in who we are. What are your thoughts?
Well, and you know, yeah, I just wanted to interrupt you there one thing. You know, in the past, women have been the protectors of children. Mm-hmm. They have been the educators of society. They have been the weavers of society, putting together the nonprofits, not just the nonprofits, but the churches. You know, they've been active, and even though they might not have been on the altar, they ran the place. You know?
Right.
A woman's work is never done. We were out there, you know, we've done everything. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is, though, now is how do we take our leadership to the higher levels? I don't like looking at a presidential cabinet meeting and it's 90% white males. And
right.
Not only that, not even of a mixed intergeneration. That's not leadership, and that's not what our country's about. But to fix that, we're going to need a lot of civic engagement. We're going to need to change the way people vote. We're going to need to change campaign laws because of how much money is put into the old guard.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to create a new network. You know, they used to say the old boys network. I say, oh, no, we need a new dynamic, inclusive network that opens the door for people and that helps them develop their talents, because otherwise we're not going to be a strong America.
Right, right. It's we've got to bring everybody to the table that has a voice in what our future is. What role do you believe women can and need to play in shaping a better future?
Well, you know, it was discouraging way back even in the 90s to see how long it would take us to diversify our political systems, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Colorado, where I live, in Denver, we've never had a woman mayor.
Right.
We've never had a woman governor.
Governor.
We've never
right.
had a woman senator. Yeah, I mean, you know, so how are we going to make our voices heard at the level where our... Now, this is our public money. This is our future that's being discussed. I mean, that's what the government runs on. And so I definitely believe that women need to get politically involved. We elected our first district attorney woman here, and she's looking at things like community policing and juvenile justice and things and how the justice system interfaces with Black and Latino the community. So I think women, when they get to a position of power, and we can, you know, whether you were for Hillary or whatever, you know, she did a lot of work in children's health and education and things like that. And those are our issues. Whatever affects family and children, women have always been the protectors, and they have always been the ones that have ensured the future. So, you know, I mean, for the women that are listening that are younger, you know, I'm in my 70s and people ask me, are you retiring? And I'm saying, hell no, I'm just getting going. I don't think there's a time for us to lay back. You know, you got to
right.
know your time.
Right.
And this is a time for us to say, we are going to save the American Republic.
Yeah. Yeah. So time to step up and really move forward. And I know you've been such a role model in starting your own organizations and initiatives. And let's talk a little bit about that. Why is it so important for women to own starting their own things, to own their voice, to step into new initiatives? And I know you call it, so, you know, you've been a social entrepreneur. Let's talk a little bit about what that means to you.
Yeah, that's a great question. For the business women that are listening, I consider myself a social entrepreneur. I'm now working on a fourth organization that's going to bring Latino leadership across the country. And I think one of the reasons I've been successful is that I ran the nonprofits as a business.
Mm-hmm.
So there's good, you know, the business principles are, what are your outcome? You know, it used to cost us like $180 to get a woman job. And I could show how many taxes she would pay in the future if we provided that job, or we had a high school dropout program that at that time cost $1,500. And at that time, which is probably much more now because it was in the 80s, those young people would give back $200,000 in taxes as opposed to taking taxes if they didn't have a high school degree. So you can prove, you know, in dollars and cents why social entrepreneurship is important to this country.
Right.
But the other thing is, on the other side, on the business side, if businesses are not good corporate citizens, if they're not involved in community, if they're not, you know, if they're selling things to young people, are they involved in the millennial, some of the millennial challenges that our young people are having? And we have some good companies that do that, but I just think that's a hat we should all wear. You know, we want to be effective. We want to have a good economy, but not at the expense of not having the kind of society that we want to pass on to our children. And this is going to affect everybody. I mean, the environment is not going to affect me and not affect you. It's going to affect our children across the board.
Right.
And the same thing with healthcare. Millennials today are not predicted to live as long as the boomers. Lifespan is now going down.
Oh, wow.
They're predicted to have a cancer at a much higher rate. Mm-hmm. And so these are the things that are going to impact your children, not you know, because this is across the board. Mm-hmm. And so if leadership is about legacy, and if women have always been the protectors and builders of society, then I think it's time for us to, you know, have some role models that are more like warriors almost. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? That we just need to say, no, we need to say, this is not happening on my watch. My grandchildren are going to have a better future. And I just think if we could start thinking that way, and you know, I know we all have so much to do and all of this, but we got to step back and think about the future, think about our legacy, and think about the ones that will come after us, because that's how we got here. We got here because the people before us,
right.
Our grandmothers,
right?
Right, who forged right. the West, our right. grandmothers who worked cleaning houses, our, you know, they did it so we could be where we are today. And I think that's how we continue to evolve both in humanity and in our humanity.
Right. Oh, I love this. Totally love this. And I so agree with you. So what gives you hope, Juana?
Well, one thing I think is so inspiring is I believe in the younger generation. I've had the honor of speaking at over 100 universities to the millennial generation. And, you know, the studies show that millennials are, well, first of all, you know, raised by feminist mothers, but they really believe in creating a good society and taking care of the environment,
yes.
equalizing some of the wealth distribution. And so when I meet with millennials and I see their activism, I had an incredible program with DACA students, these young, bright immigrant kids that want to, you know, have a good future. So that gives me hope, right?
Right.
The other thing is seeing how far we've come. You know, I grew up, I was born in the 40s. And, you know, the way women were socialized, the 40s and 50s, and then the feminist explosion when I was like 26 or 7 years old, and then seeing how far women have come, and more than that, growing up as a Hispanic immigrant, seeing how far our community has come. Sometimes when I am at a really amazing Hispanic event, I know my mother would have tears in her eyes and mm-hmm. would not believe that we've been able to accomplish what we've accomplished in my lifetime. You know, so when you look at the future and you look at the past, I think that inspires me.
Yeah.
But one thing that is real important is looking at the life example of my parents and my mentors. I have had some incredible mentors in my life. You know, they've passed on now, but I've seen what it means to live a life of purpose, to be able at the end of your life to feel, you know, I did something with the time here that I was here. And lastly, to have that community of people, because when you get involved, as you know, you end up having a community of people and working together. And I think that sense of solidarity and that sense of purpose comes not just from your own life, but being with other people that inspire you as well.
I like that a lot. I so agree with it. And what keeps you going? I mean, as you're, like you said, you're starting a new company, a new organization. So what keeps you going?
Well, I would say to most women that taking care of yourself and you know, don't ever compromise your health, because mm-hmm. you have to feel good about yourself, you know,
right.
and you know, you have to watch your weight and watch what you eat and exercise. And I do yoga, because as you get older, you also lose balance. So it's mm-hmm. not just strength, but you have to do that kind of thing. So I think really, you know, having that commitment to yourself that in order for you to be your extraordinary self or to be your best self, you know, you have to take care of yourself. And that becomes, you know, really important. And I guess what keeps me going is, I just did a program with a group of young Latinos, and we were together for 5 days, And at the end of that 5 days, they really did have a sense of family and a sense of unity. And it really keeps me going to do work with people and to see that in a short period of time, we can learn to connect, we can learn to work together, we can learn to support each other, we can learn to, I don't use the word mentoring anymore, we can learn to be partners, learning partners for each mm-hmm. other. Mm-hmm. And so I believe in human potential. I believe in my own potential, and I believe, you know, we only use 10% of our mind. Right. I wish we were doing more research on how we could expand human consciousness. How could we become more of who we are? We have an incredible potential to create a really beautiful world. And so I keep that vision in front of me, and I believe in the potential of humankind. And, you know, if I'm wrong, so what?
Yeah. Yeah. And you have such a passion for it.
It worked for me.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And you're helping with each person that you touch. It's that ripple effect of how they go out and make a difference with the gifts of who they are. I think it's just.
And by the way, that's what leadership is. You right. see somebody's potential, you believe in them. And, you know, and that's what happened to me with my mentors. They saw something in me when I was in my 30s. Just reach back. And every time you do that, it inspires you because you see another person, another young person. And so that's what I think the greatest payback is and the greatest gift.
Yeah. So speaking of you in your 30s, what would you tell your 30-year-old self?
Well, that's a hard one, isn't it? what would I tell my 30-year? Well, I think one thing is that because I have been so focused on my career, and I also have 3 daughters, all of which are doing well. One's a lawyer, one's an art professor, and one's a special ed teacher. And so I didn't really begin my leadership career, which is probably interesting for women, because I tell young women, you can have it all, but not all at once.
Right. I agree.
And so I had spent probably the first 10, 15 years of my career, which is unheard of for a millennial, they don't spend that much time, really building my skills and understanding people and what it took to move people forward and how to motivate and what, you know, how do you build programs that are based on people's needs and what they want. And so I was almost like 35 or 6 before I went to help start Mikasa. And I think having that kind of perspective, you know, that you have time, that you can pace yourself, that you can build your skills. I wish I knew that in my 40s and my 30s.
That's a good one.
You know, I wish I had that sense of pacing myself and enjoying my life more. I was able to raise my 3 children really well, but I never was able to establish a partnership with, because I'm heterosexual, at least I'm a psi gender. Mm-hmm. I never really established a relationship with a partner. And I think if I was in my 30s, I might look at my life more holistically, you know, and say, Juana, by the way, Juana, you're going to live till you're 90, so why don't you just step back and think about the next 60?
Right. Because
we don't do that when we're young.
Many times.
Yeah. We don't do that. We put ourselves under all this pressure, you know, and if you have that perspective, hey, I'm going to be around for a while. You know, if it doesn't happen, at least you had a good time while you were here.
That's right.
And I would dance more, definitely.
Oh, there you go. I love that. So what keeps you up at night?
Well, I think what keeps me up at night is that I'm just so concerned about losing that sense of humanity that brought us to where we are today, you know, having it kind of unravel and people becoming very us and them, and not investing in the social fabric. I mean, it's every time you put money into education, you're investing in our future. Every time you put money into health, you're investing into having a healthy population. And if you look at the statistics in Sweden and some of the Scandinavian countries, you know, we're not the happiest country in the world.
Yeah.
And so
what
keeps me up at night is the fact that we've kind of, dumbed down the educational system. Instead of us really understanding that we're living in a global age, we're living in a multicultural age, we're living in an age where gender is being redefined, we're living in an age where, there's so many refugees and there's so much going on in the world that we need to have this world perspective because we are living in a global village now. But how do you educate people about that? How do you educate them about immigration? How do you educate them about the real role of women so that we don't have this backlash, which I believe is really just trying to save patriarchy and dominance, you know, because that's what's the alternative
is that we would continue on this pathway. And that does keep me up at night, but I don't try to spend too much time on it because all I can do is what I've been sent here to do. Mm-hmm. And that is to create as many leaders as I can,
right,
to support as many women as I can, you know, and to be an example that, you know, as you get older, you can actually be more productive and more involved in a different way.
Right.
But that you're still such a valuable asset to our country.
You keep building on your wisdom, sharing your wisdom that you've gained over the
years. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
You know.
So what is next for you? Tell us a little bit about what you're working on.
Well, what I'm dreaming about and working on is a national institute that would have resources, curriculums, models to build community leadership programs for Latinos across the country. We did a study, less than 0.5% of Latinos are in leadership training, and yet 1 out of 5 millennials are Latino, and in 25 years, that's going to be the population across the country. And so I'd like to see, and I think this was done a lot with women in the 90s and so forth, I would like to see Latinos across the country have an opportunity to learn leadership, mm-hmm, leadership that's community-based, mm-hmm, leadership that values and honors our assets, like hard work, like generosity, like collaboration and cooperation, and that is civically engaged and is building a better future for our children. And that's, you know, if you read about leadership, that's really what it's about. It's how do you leave that legacy? How do you make things better for other people? And how, and the interesting thing is that when you do that, you not only help others, but you transform yourself. Mm-hmm. You find your very best self. You find that which it is, which is your gift to give. You find the people that respect and honor you and want to work together with you, that you have a shared vision with. And so it's such an incredible journey to be in leadership, because it really not only helps you, but helps the people around you, and then eventually transforms our society.
Nice. And where can they learn more, our listeners learn more about you and your work?
Well, I have several websites. My business one is called MestizaLeadership.com, M-E-S-T-I-Z-A. Mm-hmm. And that's basically a company where I do, you know, I've written two books on diversity and leadership, Salsa, Soul, and Spirit, Leadership for a Multicultural Age, and then The Power of Latino Leadership. And so a lot of my professional work right now is promoting multicultural and inclusive leadership, which includes what I'm talking about, being active, you know, making the world better, because that's how communities of color were able to advance.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have the organization, Lideramos.org, is really for people that want to work with us in creating more leadership models and programs across the country. And even though these will be culturally based, they're going to be good models that can be used in other communities. So they can look at that. And then I have a
What was it? Can you spell that one?
Yeah, it's LIDERAMOS. It means leading together. Lideramos.
Okay.
Lideramos. Uh-huh. Yes. And so, and it might give people good ideas, you know, whether it's, you know, working with a Girl Scout troop and really helping young girls have that sense of self-efficacy of who they are and what they can become, or whether it's working in your church, or whether it's getting involved in the Me Too movement, or the, some of the things that have happened with women and violence, or whether it's helping in your corporation to change the wages. I don't know. I can't remember the name of the CEO who had a wage study done. Do you know about this one?
Is it Cotter?
I don't know. Women aren't. Yeah.
Yes.
Women aren't discriminated here. Bingo. Cost him millions of dollars.
Right.
But I mean, think about that. And think about women, you know, just beginning, because that's what we did in the 90s. You know, women started women affinity groups and corporations. They, you know, they joined groups, they joined associations. And I'm sure your leaders are already doing that. And so my message is ladies, let's step it up. Let's finish the job. We got 2 years before we've had to vote 100 years.
That's
so we
right.
got to get kicking.
We got to get going. I love it. I totally love it. So what 3 pearls of wisdom would you like to leave our audience with today? I know you've given us a ton already, but let's close it up with the final 3.
All right. Well, I know this is going to sound trite. Everybody says, you know, follow your passion, follow your dreams. But see, I believe that when you came here, you came at a specific time with a specific contribution to make.
I hear that too.
And you have a little backpack, like my backpack had communication in it. It did. My backpack had high energy in it.
Right.
You know, and so you're going to have it. Some people have incredible analytical skills, you know. Some people have incredible people skills. They can make people feel part of the group and make people feel valued. So when you follow your passion, you really also need to know who am I and what makes me unique. That's what we're here for. Well, you know, what makes me unique? Because I always say, you're a one-of-a-kind design.
Yes.
You know, a unique expression of the divine. There's nobody like you and never will be. So, and within that, I think you're also given kind of a dream. You know, you have a passion, but you also have some sort of vision, some sort of thing that you think, you know, that's where I can make my mark. So I think that's worth it. And when I talk to young people, I say, even though you're young, you got to integrate your past experience because you're on a journey. And by looking back, you can see where you're going. You know, by looking at the opportunities you were given, the jobs you were offered, you know, the college you went to. So I would do a lot of, you know, reflection and introspection. I have a thing on my website, by the way, called Passion and Power, Finding Your Personal Purpose. And it basically is about that. You know, what are my skills? When was I born? What is my vision? That kind of thing.
That's what my book is about. My book, Fire Dancer, is it's Fire Dancer, your spiral journey to a life of passion and purpose. So it's totally in line with what you're saying.
Yeah, you see, great minds think alike.
That's right. I love it.
And then I already talked about taking care of yourself because, you know, women were not taught to do that. I think we've gotten a lot better. Mm-hmm. You know, but in the past, women would take care of their children and their spouses and their mothers and their fathers and were caretakers. And within all that, the idea, and you know, like last week I was so busy, I didn't keep my exercise schedule. And that's a no-no, really. Mm-hmm. Because as we know, ladies, it can slip away and pretty soon you're not talking 5 pounds. You're talking 15.
Right. Totally agree.
You know, so there's a certain amount of discipline that you have to have in order to really reach your potential and be extraordinary. And that a lot of that discipline has to do with, you know, how can I prepare myself for the long haul?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. So it's the passion and it's taking care of yourself. And then what's number three?
And number three, I think, I don't know if this is just what I'm seeing today, but I think we need to see ourselves as part of a human community, you know, that there's one race, the human race. I mean, mm-hmm. somehow we have to, you know, I know that we're coming out of tribes and individual nation states and all that, but what's happening in the world today, if we don't get a handle on, you know, like I tell people, one year I went to every single church, you know, the Muslim church, the Buddhist church, the Baptist church, the, you know, Christian Rite church, because I wanted to see how different people honored the spirit. And I think somehow we have to start becoming a universalist. We need to start becoming, you know, making connections across cultures and genders and so forth, because we're coming to this convergence because of travel and technology and all the things that are going on. And if we don't get a handle on that, you know, we're either going to, as Martin Luther King said, you know, we can either live together as brothers and sisters or we can perish as fools.
Right. I totally agree with that. And I think that coming back to that humanity is a beautiful way to close this today.
Yeah. And by the way, it has to be an effort. It has to be a proactive effort.
Right.
That's the number one habit of a highly effective person is to be proactive. This is what I want to do. This is how I'm going to do it.
I love it. Well, Juana, it's been such a pleasure to have you on, and thank you so much for taking time with us today.
Well, thank you for doing this for women. Thank you.
You bet. Well, you have a great day.
All righty. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you thinking about making the next bold move in your life? I invite you to take the Your Next Bold Move quiz at cammygelner.com to find out how you can jumpstart a passionate and meaningful next chapter. You may also enjoy my book, Fire Dancer, Your Spiral Journey to a Life of Passion and Purpose, which is available on Amazon. In Fire Dancer, you will become intimately connected to your heart's calling and build the courage and resiliency to ignite your what's next. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media channels. I'm on both Facebook and Twitter, and the links are available on my website. Till next time, my friend, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.